All right, Alexandra, let's discuss the weekend global conferences, last week's global conferences. We had the Munich conference, which was virtual. We had the G7, used to be the G8, but now it's the G7, which was virtual, but I guess it was hosted by the UK, but it was virtual. And we had Boris Johnson telling Angela Merkel to mute herself on the Zoom call, and we had Biden giving speeches, telling the world that America is back, Jack. That's just coded words for America is ready to start regime change, operations and color revolutions. And as President Joe Biden, I'm gonna probably be in bed, not aware of anything that's going on. But hey, America is back, and the Atlantic is back, and the virtual stuff is ridiculous. The speeches were ridiculous. Both of these conferences, I mean, it's all broken. The entire system is broken, and it's in complete shambles. And I bet you Biden was very happy, and his handlers are probably ecstatic at the fact that he doesn't have to travel anywhere, because he probably couldn't travel anywhere. So the virtual probably, fits Biden's schedule really well. But anyway, it's a sham. We're seeing the Atlantic alliance and the Western powers just I mean, they're crumbling. Right before our eyes, and the virtual. And I couldn't think of a better way to see this all crumble than via these ridiculous virtual meetings. Like a better, I guess you would say it's like a metaphor, I guess, or a better symbolism than seeing it all crumble via these ridiculous virtual meetings, Alexander.
I completely agree. Now, can I just say, first of all, there would have once upon a time been this is, would have been once been huge news. We would have had these meetings, the new American president meeting the leaders of the West. We would have had, lots of stories have been in the newspapers, in the media, television, all that. Hardly anyone is interested. And why would they be interested? Because what actually happened at these meetings? Almost nothing happened at these meetings. As you absolutely rightly said, they all looked incredibly pleased and self-satisfied people meeting with each other, telling themselves how important they are. And the rest of the world trundles on and passes by and pays no attention at all. And when you look at what these people actually said, it's not surprising, because in fact, to all intents and purposes, they said absolutely nothing, nothing of any substance or interest, nothing that, really addresses any of the real problems we're seeing around the world. I mean, we're in the time of pandemic, we're in a time of economic crisis, there is a renewed talk of an arms race going on, there's deployments of hypersonic weapons, there's all kinds of things of this nature. There's been a rise in, jihadi terrorism in the Middle East. ISIS seems to be back in some form. And yet, one got no sense at all that the leaders of the West, the great leaders of the great Western world, have any real conception or ability or imagination to actually grasp these problems and to actually start doing things which will address those problems in any meaningful way. And in terms of Biden, there was something about his speeches which I found even more extraordinary. One, they were obviously written for him by committees. I mean, they have all that quality. They're amorphous. They have no real structure. They go from one topic to another in a completely random sort of way, which is very much a feature of committee writing, as the committee which writes them looks to fill the various boxes. And of course, his delivery was poor, and he fluffed his words. At one point in one of the speeches, he said division instead of vision. At another point, he said reflective instead of reflexive. And bizarrely and weirdly, when these speeches were then posted on the White House website, somebody, presumably not Biden, made a decision to leave all those mistakes there with all the corrections coming after, as if to emphasize that Biden isn't capable of delivering a speech without making these strange lapses in words and things. It was most strange. I've never seen that happen before. And looking at these events, I get to say who I think really has cause to be pleased with the what happened at these meetings. It's obviously the Biden people are, you know, ecstatic because they think, well, you know, we're back, we're here, you know, the world is converging around us again, we're, you know, we're all is back to normal once more. But the real person who attended these meetings, who's probably the most pleased, is Angela Merkel, because she's getting everything that she wants. She's got the pressure to increase defense spending, which is difficult in Germany for all kinds of reasons. That's slackening. She's been asked to support US policies around the world, and Middle East and China. Well, she could say that she does that, but it doesn't really mean anything. The pressures to buy natural gas from the US, all of those things that were coming from Trump, the pressures to stop Nord Stream 2, they're fading. I mean, I've just done a program, a video for this, which is going to come out shortly on my own channel, about how Blinken seems to be rowing back on sanctions on Nord Stream 2. So Angela Merkel, who is, of course, the great embodiment of the EU global system, globalist system, she is probably the person who came away from this meeting the most satisfied and the most generally satisfied, because after all the stresses and problems that Donald Trump caused her, what she now sees is that she has an administration in Washington that's come back and is giving her exactly as Barack Obama used to do, everything she wants.
Yeah, everyone's happy because it's not a U.S. Agenda, or the U.S. is not going to be looking after its best interests. Not that when you look after your best interests, you can't use diplomacy and come to compromises, but it's now, you know, the United States is now fully in the arms of the globalists, and that makes Angela Merkel absolutely ecstatic. Here's an article, here's a title from the Toronto Star, which just shows how clueless the media is on this. The title reads, "Without Donald Trump at the G7, the U.S. president is no longer a laughing matter." I mean, these journalists are either they're either so in the pocket or they're just so absolutely clueless as to what's going on in the world. I mean, it's the exact opposite. When Donald Trump was there, things were getting shaken up and things got done because you had tension, because you had give and take, and that's how you work out compromises and that's how you get to solutions. Like you said, like I said, now everything is just smooth sailing ahead. You do have a president who's a laughing stock, and they're laughing because Angela Merkel and Xi Jinping and everyone, even Putin, everyone is just sitting there saying, you know, we can just do whatever we want and we can follow our course now. And, you know, these guys are just they're just out to lunch.
Absolutely. This is exactly what's happening. I mean, I think this is a point that you put your finger on. It's not America is coming back. It's actually America is actually now really retreating. Donald Trump came along as president and said, these are America's interests. We have these concerns. We want to do this, this and this. The Europeans didn't like that at all. They weren't used to that. And they, far from being laughing at Donald Trump, they were very angry about this. I mean, we all remember that extraordinary photograph where Donald Trump was sitting with his arms crossed, and you saw all those European leaders led by Angela Merkel, and they were their faces, you know, contorted with anger as they confront him, and Trump not willing to show any movement at all because he was staking his position and he was expecting them to come round to his way of thinking. And then, as you said, after that, you can cut deals. That's not what's happening now. Now what we see is that Biden and Blinken are coming along and, you know, they say, you know, we want to be friends again. We don't want to do all those things that terrible orange man used to do. So we're going to give you everything you want. We're not going to give you fresher, you know, grief on raising defense spending in the way that Trump did. Of course, we're going to bring it up, but we're not actually going to do anything about it. So, you know, if you don't actually meet your quotas, well, you know, we're not too fussed about that. We're not going to really put real pressure on you on controversial things like Nord Stream 2. We're not going to do anything of that kind. We're not really going to ruffle your feathers or bother you in any meaningful way, because we want to be your friends. And we're the great United States, and we're here to, you know, write out all the checks and support you in everything you do, even if that means, you know, you're going to go on pursuing your policies in your self-interest, as you always have. That's what we're now looking at to a great extent. And when you look at the speeches that Biden actually delivered, they're empty ones. I mean, he says, even with respect to the Russians and the Chinese, he talks as if he's going to really take steps against them. But he's not actually saying what those steps are going to be. It's all empty. And as I said, he's given the Russians an arms control agreement, you know, the renewal of the START treaty on their terms, which, by the way, I think was the right thing to do. But, you know, you could present it in a different way. He just came along and he gave it to Putin. He's not apparently going to impose any really radical sanctions on Nord Stream 2, which is what Trump was going to do because he doesn't want to annoy the Germans. He's not actually doing very much about anything at the moment. And of course, except in the Middle East, where we see a growing drift towards war. America isn't leading. It's not back, it's drifting.
Is the whole point of this then to... So I was going to bring up the NATO thing and the U.S. war machine. We did a live stream on this. And that's the one thing that they are going to use the U.S. for, the globalists. Yeah. They're going to use the U.S. to enter into these crazy, ridiculous, destructive Middle East conflicts.
Yes.
But is the point to all of this then, the point to Biden, the point to the Europeans getting everything that they want, the Angela Merkel's getting everything what they want, and even the point to getting the U.S. bogged down in more meaningless conflict? Is it just all about, for lack of a better word, bringing the U.S. to its knees in a sense?
Yes.
I don't want to say to its knees. I'm trying to think of the word. Kind of getting the U.S. to just, you know, after 4 years of Trump, to finally like catch up to speed with the globalist agenda. So we have to, you know, we have to knock it down a couple of pegs, hollow it out a little bit, you know, kind of like a sculpture, hammer it out a little, chip away and get it back to the levels where we as the Klaus Schwabs and the Merkels and the Davos crowd, where we all are, you know, we're like up here, and the U.S. is a little, you know, they resisted a little bit with Trump, but now we're going to bring them back up to speed. And then after that's done, we can focus in on Russia and China and, you know, obviously Russia, get Russia to fold in line. I mean, is that the whole point of all of this? That's why they're so happy with Biden?
Well, I think it is. I mean, first of all, I think that they are beginning to realize that with Russia, they are not going to achieve that. And we'll discuss that more. But can I just say a point about involvement, all these wars in the Middle East? The Europeans at one level are basically extremely opposed to those wars, and they're worried about immigration from them because they're worried that there's going to be a massive humanitarian crisis and that will put political pressures on them. So there is that concern in Europe. But if you look at this from a European point of view, or indeed a globalist point of view, having the United States bogged down again in Middle East wars is not such a bad thing. It means that, as you absolutely rightly say, a weakened and distracted US becomes more pliable, and you increase your leverage over it. You can say that you're sending more troops to Iraq, which is what the Europeans are doing. They're going to send 4,000 troops to Iraq on a so-called training mission. They're going to perhaps send more troops to Afghanistan. But as anybody knows, everybody, and I know some of our viewers have done so, everybody knows who has served in those conflicts, especially in the US military, those European troops don't actually do very much when they go there. In fact, they rely on the US military to protect them. They don't actually do very much actual fighting. They are there to give the impression that European countries like Germany are supporting the US, but it's not actually a meaningful or useful support in any practical terms. The British did try to fight in Iraq, and they did try and fight in Afghanistan. By the way, they failed dismally, but at least they tried. The Germans, for example, never did, and that's true of all of the other Europeans also. When it comes to actual war fighting, it is the US military that does that. But it suits the Europeans for that to happen, because it creates leverage over the US when it happens. And of course, the Chinese and the Russians, from their point of view, it's absolutely fine if the US gets bogged down in the Middle East. The Russians have some concerns because, of course, they're also present in the in the Middle East. They've got their position in Syria now. But I think the Russians also think, and I think they're probably right, that the US will not want to confront them head on. So I think that they're not at the moment too concerned about that. Whereas if the US gets itself bogged down in conflicts in Iraq, in all sorts of other places, indeed even in eastern Syria, well, that works for the Russians very well. And of course, it also works for the Russians very well if the US military footprint in Afghanistan grows, because what the US found is that it can't rely in that case on its supply lines through Pakistan. And of course, Obama was trying to get the Russians to agree to let the Russians allow equipment and troops to pass to Afghanistan through Russia, which Putin agreed to because it gave him leverage over the US. So you have all of these people looking at all of these regime change wars, and they're saying to themselves, let's let them happen, because they don't strengthen the US in the long term. They weaken it and they increase our leverage over it. The Chinese benefited hugely from the regime change wars, because of course it let them do all the things that they wanted, and the US was so distracted with what was going on in Iraqi villages and Jordanian villages and things of that kind that it wasn't paying attention. So from their point of view, these wars, obviously they have dangers, obviously they carry risks, but if they are contained in the way that they were under Barack Obama, well, they're actually not such a bad thing. And I think, again, that's possibly some of the agendas that these people have. They were alarmed when Donald Trump wanted to end the forever wars. They were alarmed when Donald Trump was pursuing America First policies. What they want to see is an America that's bogged down and pliable, and that is what they're getting.
All right, we'll leave it there. All in all, a very useless and uneventful G7. Nothing.
Absolutely.
Nothing to, really report, other than the fact that it's just so ridiculous.
Nothing. Nothing to really report, except, of course, the drift itself, which is what we're seeing, is in itself a dangerous thing. It's not something that can carry on for very much longer. I mean, at least with Obama, it was not exactly drift, because he had some awareness of what was going on. With this US administration, one can't say that anymore.
It's so silly that that these leaders can't get together somewhere in person, and they have to do it via Zoom. I mean, that's just, it's optics. It's pure optics, pure PR and spin.
Well, of course it is.
Because if they wanted to, they could meet at some location somewhere and fly there, and they could have their meeting in person if they really wanted to.
Well, of course they could. I mean, think of the Second World War when, I mean, there were all kinds of other problems, and you know, they had to worry, the leaders in that time, Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin, they all had to worry that there might be assassination attempts by you know, Axis agents. I mean, that was a real concern, by the way. So, I mean, nonetheless, Roosevelt, who was not a well man, traveled all the way to Tehran in 43 to meet Churchill and Stalin in Tehran. He traveled all the way to Yalta to meet Stalin and Churchill there. Truman went all the way to Potsdam after the war. There were meetings between Churchill and Roosevelt in Casablanca. Churchill went across the Atlantic in, you know, ships, despite the fact that there were German U-boats all over the place, to try and meet with Roosevelt in Washington, D.C. after Pearl Harbor. And these are huge events. And those were leaders. Those were people, I mean, you know, people looked up to them. People were inspired by them. They took them seriously as leaders. Now, all these virtual summits in which nothing is said, with speeches written by committees and smiles as nothing is achieved, they impress no one. They're not reported anymore. They are a sign of how leadership across the Western world has completely collapsed.
Yeah. I'm not saying they have to go into a city and turn it upside down. They could be somewhere secluded and they could get about their business, which just shows it's not really about getting about your business. That's the last thing that they care about. It's all optics. It's all optics.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. We'll leave it there. All right, guys. Look for us on BitChute, on Rumble, and on Odyssey. You'll find those links down below. Look for Alexander's channel. You'll find a link down below. Look for my channel. You'll find a link down below. And go to the Durant shop. Pick up some merch, hoodies, long sleeve shirts, all kinds of great stuff. Magic
Absolutely.
Mugs, of
Magic
course.
Mugs, hats, and as Alex said, hoodies and sweatshirts and amazing things. And of course, you support the Durant by coming to our shop and buying these great products there. And can I just say, those who buy them are enthusiastic. The feedback we're getting is absolutely wonderful and great. So come to our shop, support the Durant, look us up on our other platforms, check out our other channels, and we look forward to seeing you again in our next broadcast.
All right, everybody, take care.